Imagine waking up today. It's Tuesday, July 21st, 2026. You pour your coffee, you sit down, and you find out that the digital proof that you own your home or your land or your business has just completely vanished.
Poof. Just gone.
Right, gone. And I don't mean a government portal is temporarily down for maintenance. I mean the very concept of your legal ownership has been erased from the state's memory. It is just gone.
It's a truly terrifying premise. And for 19 million people, it's not some hypothetical scenario. It's the literal reality they're trying to navigate this very morning.
It is. So welcome to this deep dive into our source material for today. We have a massive stack of revealing documents to go through.
Yeah, quite a stack.
We're looking at excerpts from an investigative article titled "When a Nation Lost Its Property Records." We've got actual dark web forum posts, financial reports from the Romanian daily Ziarul Financiar, a security analysis from the threat intelligence firm Kila, and this really hard-hitting editorial from Tikkun Game. We're looking at all of this because exactly 1 week ago, on July 14th, 2026, the European nation of Romania suffered one of the most catastrophic cyber attacks on government infrastructure in history. Okay, let's unpack this.
What's fascinating here is that this event, it sort of forces us to reevaluate our entire definition of a cyber attack.
How so?
Well, historically, we think of these events as like a data breach. You know, someone steals a database of credit card numbers, or a hospital's files get locked up by ransomware until a fee is paid.
Right. The usual stuff.
Exactly. But this wasn't a breach or a simple lockout. This was the total deliberate erasure of a sovereign nation's cadastral system. The entire property registry. Poof. Gone.
Unbelievable. To really wrap our heads around the sheer scale of this disaster, we first have to look at what exactly disappeared on the day the records vanished.
Yeah, we need to talk about ANCPI.
Right, the National Agency for Cadastra and Real Estate Advertising. They ran a platform called eTERA, didn't they?
They did. And the eTERA platform was the digital heart of Romanian property ownership. I mean, a cadastral system is essentially a comprehensive, centralized land registration system.
You know, it maps out property lines, that kind of thing.
Yeah, property lines, ownership information, property values, historical ownership changes. Over the last 20 years, Romania went through this massive modernization effort.
Getting rid of the paper files.
Exactly. They took decades of old, dusty paper records, which were often decentralized and localized, and replaced them with a streamlined, centralized digital map of the entire nation's real estate.
So it was modern and incredibly efficient. It was the system that every notary, lawyer, bank, and citizen relied on to prove who owned what.
It was the single source of truth.
Think of it like the master ledger at a bank. If a bank building burns to the ground, the physical cash in the vault might survive. But if the master ledger burns with it, nobody knows who that cash actually belongs to.
Right. The money becomes meaningless.
Exactly. And that is essentially what happened to an entire country's land on July 14th.
On that Tuesday, eTERA just went dark. Now, initially, the agency downplayed the severity. Their first official public statement called it a, quote, major technical problem.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, they even assured the public that the data was secure and they were working on restoring service.
Which is just the classic crisis PR playbook, you know, tell everyone not to panic, it's just a server glitch. But the sources show that internal panic was already setting in fast.
Within 24 hours, the horrifying reality could no longer be hidden. It wasn't a glitch. The entire primary database, along with all of its online backups, had been deliberately and maliciously deleted.
It's a digital bonfire. Just imagine you're in the middle of closing on a house, you've packed your boxes, you've transferred your life savings, and you are sitting across from a notary who looks at their screen and tells you that the government literally no longer knows who owns the property you're trying to buy.
It's a nightmare.
You are completely in legal limbo. And it isn't just home buyers, is it?
Not at all. It's farmers trying to prove land borders for agricultural subsidies. It's commercial real estate developers trying to secure permits.
Wow.
If the government cannot legally verify that a piece of dirt belongs to you, you cannot build on it, you cannot sell it, and you cannot borrow against it. The entire concept of a real estate transaction requires an objective third party, the state, to act as the ultimate verifier of reality.
And without that verifier, the market just ceases to exist.
Exactly. It freezes.
So that leads to the obvious, logical question here. How does a digital fortress protecting a nation's entire real estate registry just fall over?
You'd think it'd be heavily guarded.
Right. A system that important should be practically invincible. But the answer we found in the Zero Financial Reports points to a genuinely shocking misallocation of funds.
The budget breakdown is staggering. Over those 20 years of modernization, ANCPI spent roughly 135 million euros on digitalization.
135 million?
Yeah. And they successfully built a beautiful, functional, highly responsive e-Terra system that citizens loved using. But out of that massive investment, only 0.2% was spent on cybersecurity.
Let's just pause on that math. 0.2%.
About 305,000 euros over two decades.
That's nothing.
For context, the absolute baseline industry standard for any normal corporate enterprise is to allocate at least 10 to 15% of their IT budget to security.
Right, right.
And for critical nation-state government infrastructure, cybersecurity experts advocate for 20 to 25%. They spent less than 1%.
They spent 500 euros building the digital house for every 1 euro they spent on locks for the doors. Here's where it gets really interesting, because when a whole country goes offline, the media immediately paints this picture of an unstoppable genius hacker.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, a shadowy state-sponsored operative dropping through the skylight on a laser wire, deploying impossible zero-day exploits. But looking at this budget, I have to assume this wasn't a highly sophisticated cyber siege. This sounds like somebody just walked through an unlocked front door.
That is exactly what happened. The threat intelligence firm, Keela, identified the attacker. He operates under the moniker Byte to Breach, and they confirmed he's an individual named Zakaria Majoub, based in Oran, Algeria.
So, not a James Bond villain.
No, he is not a state-sponsored mastermind working for a foreign intelligence agency. He's an opportunistic, financially motivated cybercriminal. And he didn't use advanced, impossible-to-stop malware to break in. He used valid employee credentials.
Wait, he literally just logged in with a username and password.
Yep, because the network lacked fundamental baseline security protocols. They did not have multi-factor authentication, or MFA, for sensitive access.
That's insane.
Without MFA, a simple stolen password is a skeleton key to the entire operation. Once he was inside the system, he discovered that there was zero network segmentation.
Let's explain network segmentation really quickly, just so we're totally clear on why the absence of it is so deadly here.
Sure. Think of a military submarine. If one section of the hull gets a leak, you seal the heavy steel doors between the compartments so the whole sub doesn't fill with water and sink.
Makes sense.
Network segmentation is the exact same concept. You physically or logically separate the day-to-day employee email servers from the highly classified critical government databases.
So if someone hacks an intern's email, they are trapped in that compartment.
Exactly. But ANCPI had what we call a flat network. Once Byte to Breach got past the first door, he had the keys to every single room in the entire building.
And the most mind-boggling part of this flat network is where they kept the backups. The sources show the backup systems were connected to that exact same main network.
Which is a cardinal sin in IT.
Right. If the main system catches fire, your backup shouldn't be sitting in the same room. It defeats the entire purpose of having a backup.
It's a catastrophic architectural failure. And the attacker knew exactly how easy this was. He recognized the negligence immediately.
Which adds this layer of utter humiliation to the whole tragedy. I'm looking at the actual dark web forum post Byte to Breach put up on July 15th. The title reads, quote, R.O. Thy R shall be spanked, Romania, ANCPI.
Yeah, it's quite the title.
It's absurd. We picture cyber warfare as this stoic, highly technical battlefield, and the reality is an arrogant guy in Algeria posting taunts because a national agency couldn't be bothered to turn on two-factor authentication.
It highlights the asymmetric reality of modern cybercrime. You do not need a billion-dollar military budget to cripple a country. You just need to find the one agency that ignored basic security hygiene.
So we know the front door was left wide open, but the steps the attacker took once he was actually inside the system represent a terrifying evolution in how these cybercriminals operate today. Let's look at how he actually moved through the system. This wasn't a smash-and-grab robbery, was it?
No, it was a methodical heist.
Right.
Very methodical.
Walk us through it.
After gaining initial access with those stolen credentials, he didn't trigger any alarms because there were no robust security monitoring systems in place. He had the luxury of time.
Wow.
He quietly mapped the entire network. He cataloged the servers, located the primary eTERRA databases, and specifically mapped out where those online backups were stored.
He's just wandering the halls, taking inventory of the crown jewels, totally undetected, and before he breaks anything, he starts stealing.
That data exfiltration is the most critical phase. He made complete copies of all the property databases and the employee information. Crucially, he also found the servers containing the actual source code, the very blueprints of the eTERRA and Wren software, and copied those too.
So he stole the underlying architecture of the entire system.
He did.
Then comes the extortion. He contacts the officials and demands a ransom. The exact amount isn't fully disclosed in the sources, but he threatens to release the data and destroy the systems if they don't pay. Now, the Romanian government refused to pay.
Which is standard protocol, generally.
Right, but from a pure math perspective, looking at the daily economic bleed we'll discuss in a minute, some people might ask, why not just pay the guy? A few million euros to save billions in economic damage seems like a pragmatic, if painful, trade.
It is a logical question, but it fundamentally misunderstands how modern ransomware operates, and it ignores international security protocols.
How so?
Governments are heavily pressured not to pay ransoms because it directly funds organized crime and future attacks. But more importantly, paying a cyber criminal offers absolutely zero guarantee that they will return your data or leave your systems intact. I mean, they are criminals.
So by refusing, they basically called his bluff, and he wasn't bluffing.
He was not. When they refused, he didn't just lock the data with encryption. He completely destroyed it. He deleted all the primary databases. And because the backups were on that same flat network, he reached over and deleted those too.
Unbelievable.
Finally, he took all the data he had secretly copied and listed it for sale on the dark web.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the security analysis from Keela frames this as a massive shift from the ransomware attacks we used to read about.
Yes, we are witnessing the dawn of ransomware 3.0.
3.0.
What were the first two?
Well, think back to ransomware 1.0, roughly a decade ago. Hackers would infect an individual's personal computer, encrypt their family photos, and demand a few $100s in Bitcoin to unlock them. It was a nuisance, but localized.
Boy, I remember that.
Then came ransomware 2.0. This was the era of attacking corporations with double extortion. They would encrypt a company's network, demanding millions. And if the company tried to restore from backups, the hackers would threaten to leak sensitive corporate data to ruin their reputation.
So they hold both your operations and your reputation hostage.
Exactly. But ransomware 3.0 moves beyond corporations. These are attacks on critical national infrastructure using triple extortion. They steal the data, they threaten to leak it, and instead of just encrypting your systems, they completely wipe the servers.
This is designed to cause national-level consequences. Forcing a sovereign country to rebuild its infrastructure from scratch is the ultimate leverage.
It's terrifying leverage.
Yeah.
And whenever we talk about attacks on national infrastructure, especially in Eastern Europe, there are always geopolitical whispers. We have to address the rumors mentioned in the sources.
Right, the Russia theories.
Yeah, Romania is a NATO ally. Naturally, some media outlets and European officials immediately pointed fingers at Russia, suggesting this was a deliberate hybrid warfare attack.
It's a very common assumption, given the region, but we have to look objectively at the evidence provided in the source material. Keela's analysis and the attacker's own history strongly contradict the Russian state sponsor theory.
So it really was just this one guy.
Byte to Breach has a documented track record. He's previously attacked Sweden's e-government portal, commercial airlines, and global banks. His tactics, you know, stealing credentials, exploiting basic misconfigurations, are the hallmark of an independent, financially motivated cybercriminal.
Makes sense.
Nation states deploying advanced persistent threat groups don't usually use hackers whose identities are easily exposed. And they certainly don't start by demanding financial ransoms on dark web forums and posting absurd taunts.
So we aren't endorsing any geopolitical blame game here. We're just looking at the facts, and the evidence points to a lone criminal. But you can't entirely separate the geopolitics from the outcome, can you? I mean, the data is out there now.
That is the crucial gray zone in modern cyber warfare. Even if the attacker isn't state-sponsored, the data he stole is incredibly valuable. He listed the property records, national IDs, and the source code of a NATO country's critical infrastructure for sale.
So anyone could buy it.
Hostile governments or foreign intelligence agencies don't need to execute the hack themselves. They can simply buy the stolen blueprints on the open market.
The attacker got exactly what he wanted, and he burned the digital house down on his way out. But while that data is sitting on the dark web waiting for a buyer, the actual on-the-ground cost for Romania is catastrophic.
Oh, it's paralyzing.
The entire country's real estate market is completely frozen.
Think about the cascading effects here. Notaries cannot validate legal documents. Banks cannot register mortgages, which means lending for housing has stopped overnight.
Everything grinds to a halt.
Construction companies cannot register new land parcels, so development projects are halted. And the government is collecting zero revenue from property taxes and registration fees.
The human toll is massive. People can't move. Businesses can't expand. And the conservative estimates in the financial report suggest the daily economic bleed is between 50 and 100 million euros every single day.
It's astonishing.
If this outage lasts 2 months, the total economic damage could hit 3 to 6 billion euros. Which brings up the recovery timeline. How long is this actually going to take to fix?
In the sources, Patrick Gray from the cybersecurity outlet Risky Business outlines two highly divergent paths. He suggests that from a logical standpoint, Romania must have an offline, air-gapped, cold backup somewhere.
Like a physical hard drive locked in a literal vault.
Yes, completely disconnected from the internet. If they have that cold backup, and the data is relatively recent, officials estimate a recovery time of 4 to 8 weeks to rebuild the network securely.
But what if they don't? What if Byte to Breach really did wipe everything and there is no magic hard drive in a vault?
Then you are looking at an apocalyptic scenario for data recovery. The government would have to rebuild the entire national database manually.
Like from paper.
They would have to gather old paper records, individual notarial documents, and citizen declarations. That is a fractured, error-prone process that could take years. Or, as Gray points out, the government might find itself in the humiliating position of having to buy its own stolen data back from the hacker on the dark web just to restore basic order.
When we talk about the dark web, I think a lot of people have a massive misconception about how it operates. I used to picture it as this chaotic, shadowy back alley bazaar where guys in hoodies randomly trade secrets on messy message boards.
Yeah, that's the Hollywood version.
Exactly. But reading through these sources, who is actually buying a country's property records? How does that transaction even work?
It is absolutely nothing like a chaotic bazaar. The dark web economy is highly structured. It functions like a highly efficient corporate supply chain.
Really? Like a business?
Oh, yeah. You have data brokers, like Byte to Breach, who steal the information and act as wholesalers. You have access brokers who specialize purely in finding open doors into networks and in selling those digital keys to other criminals.
Wow.
You even have ransomware as a service operators who are essentially software developers renting out their malicious code to affiliates for a cut of the profits.
It's literally a franchise model for extortion.
Precisely. And they even use escrow services. These are trusted third-party middlemen who hold the cryptocurrency payments in a neutral wallet until the buyer verifies that the stolen goods are legitimate.
It's a full-blown shadow economy with better customer service than some legitimate tech companies.
Sadly, yes.
And right now, that supply chain is processing millions of stolen Romanian IDs, detailed property valuations, and actual government source code. Watching a European nation lose millions of euros a day is a localized tragedy. But when you look at the underlying vulnerabilities that caused it, it exposes a massive global threat.
Absolutely.
If a 135 million euro system can be wiped out so easily by one guy with a stolen password, who is next?
The risk is global, and the sources highlight that it is particularly acute in developing nations. In cybersecurity, there is a concept called digital leapfrogging.
Digital leapfrogging.
Countries in Eastern Europe, Asia, Latin America, and Africa are rapidly modernizing. They want to skip the intermediate steps of technological development and jump straight to advanced, fully digital systems.
Which makes sense on paper. I mean, if you're building a new system today, you want the shiny, efficient new tools. You don't want to build a 1990s infrastructure.
The problem is that governments prioritize flashy, user-friendly digital portals because citizens can see them. A sleek website wins votes.
Politics.
But they completely ignore the invisible, highly expensive security infrastructure required to protect it. Our sources explicitly named countries with recently launched digital cadastral systems and limited security investment as being at high risk. Countries like Bulgaria, the Philippines, Ecuador, Kenya, to name a few.
But it's not just developing nations. The United States is mentioned in the analysis too, isn't it?
The United States faces a massive risk because its property registry system is highly fragmented across thousands of county-level registries. Some of those local counties are using incredibly outdated technology, managed by like a two-person IT department with minimal security budgets.
Oh, boy.
a coordinated attack against U.S. county registries could paralyze regional real estate markets.
Yeah.
And developed European nations like Spain and Italy operate national systems that haven't undergone comprehensive independent security audits in years.
The bank ledgers everywhere are highly combustible. So how do we fix the foundation? What are the actual non-negotiable solutions here?
The security experts in our sources outline several mandatory fixes. First, the budget. A minimum of 10 to 15% of IT budgets must go to security. Second, mandatory multi-factor authentication for every single access point.
No exception.
Third, the 3-2-1 backup rule.
Three copies of the data on two different media types, with one copy off-site and completely offline. Air-gapped?
Exactly. If the hacker cannot reach the backup through the network, they cannot delete it. And finally, implementing zero-trust architecture.
What does that mean in practice?
This means the system trusts no one by default, even if they're already inside the network. Every single action must be verified, and the network must be heavily segmented.
So what does this all mean? We have all these technical solutions, you know, MFA, zero trust, air gaps. But reading the Taken Game editorial, my mind keeps going to accountability.
Yeah, the human element.
If an agency spends 20 years and over 100 million euros on a system and purposefully allocates 0.2% to security, that isn't a mistake. That is a choice. Can citizens ever trust digital government services again if the officials who made those choices face no legal consequences for their negligence?
This raises an important question about the very nature of modern governance. We've spent the last two decades championing the incredible efficiency of centralized digital systems. But that exact efficiency inherently creates a catastrophic single point of failure.
Right. All your eggs in one digital basket.
When everything is connected and centralized, a single compromised password can paralyze an entire nation. Mm-hmm. Balancing that digital efficiency with the resilient redundancy we used to have with paper and decentralized systems is the great paradox of 21st century governance.
It really is. And it brings us to the core lesson of this deep dive. Cybersecurity is no longer just an IT issue for the tech support desk. It's a fundamental pillar of national sovereignty. The source material makes it abundantly clear. Treating critical infrastructure security as an optional expense is a total dereliction of duty.
It is the equivalent of building a national bank, storing the wealth of millions of citizens inside, and deciding not to install a vault because the lobby looks so nice. The consequences are just too devastating to ignore.
It makes you wonder about the future of ownership itself. If a nation's entire digital existence, the absolute proof of who owns what, can be completely wiped out by a single compromised password.
Yeah.
Are we going to see a renaissance of analog living? Will this generation be the one to start demanding physical stamped paper deeds again? Just something real to keep in a fireproof safe under the bed, just in case the digital cloud permanently evaporates.
A very sobering thought.
It's certainly something to think about the next time you log in to check your accounts. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the vulnerability of our digital world. We will catch you next time.